What did you have for breakfast?
Nothing. I'm not a breakfast eater.
So many food people aren't.
Well, because I feel like I know what's in store for me for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
And then I'm usually kind of, I've probably had two or three meals the night before, so the last thing on my mind is eating more. But having said that, I think now that I have children, I wake up and have
Eat breakfast with them?
Yeah.
So they're little.
This 9 and 6, yeah.
Little-ish. Yeah.
But they, you know, they want their eggs a certain way, which is always overcooked and scrambled.
Hell yeah. I still want them that way.
And I always undercook them, and then I get angry, and then I just purposefully brown them in the pan.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's my revenge on my children every day.
Exactly. Everybody, I am here in Las Vegas. If you can hear some background noise, it's because we're in a restaurant that's getting set up for the day. And my guest today is editor-at-large of Bon Appetit, Andrew Knowlton. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on. I know that you're busy because we're here for Vegas Uncorked.
Yes.
Which is a lot of activity.
Three-day blitzkrieg of eating and drinking and food and hangovers and everything.
Yeah, and so much walking around. I have blisters on my feet.
Well, you need to get one of those little mobile units, the little chairs that you see
people
in.
Oh, yeah, you do see
people. You don't need one of those yet.
Not yet. Well, you know, a lot of people who don't need them still get them for their Vegas journeys.
You don't want to be that person. No. I don't want to be that person yet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, to each their own.
Right.
So Vegas Uncorked was kind enough to host Smart Mouth to come out and get some interviews in and all that kind of stuff, which was very nice of them. So thank you, Vegas Uncorked. Tell me, I might misunderstand Bon Appetit's involvement in it. Is it like together, or is the whole thing sponsored by Bon Appetit?
We've been doing it for 12 years.
Yeah.
It's our event in conjunction with the LVCA and the different properties here.
Right.
So it's our baby, you know, mm-hmm. We work with different teams on the ground here. And, you know, every year we have different properties that are involved, but we've had our core brands, whether it's Caesars or MGM or Bellagio, or Bellagio is part of MGM, but, you know, the Cosmopolitan and all that. So it's, we dictate all the programming, and you know, I do some like, oh, I want to do this cocktail event, or uh-huh. let's get this chef involved. Uh-huh. So it's not, we're not sitting back and being like plastering our name on it. We're, right. We are involved. It is our event. It's our outreach to our listeners and our readers and our viewers.
Does the magazine have a food festival in New York as well?
We do not. I mean, we do all kinds of activities around
sure.
in our,
yeah.
we have a beautiful test kitchen at One World Trade Center in Lower Manhattan, and we do dinners and all that. And then we're involved in other festivals. We have Chicago Gourmet, which is in Millennium Park, which is a beautiful event in September. And then we, October, September. And then we also have Feast Portland, which is in Portland, Oregon, is what probably our newest event. But that's been going on for 5 or 6 years.
My cousins go to that.
It's a wonderful event. I mean, I would say all three of them are amazing, and they're all distinct. You know, Las Vegas gets this just plethora of like world-renowned chefs.
Yeah.
The Feast Portland is probably a little bit more kind of gonzo and kind of, you know.
It's like smaller restaurants.
It's Portland.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's Portland. And then Chicago is this beautiful setting in Millennium Park, and you get, you know, chefs from the Midwest and all over coming. So they're all distinct, and I love going to each of them.
What was the impetus behind doing it in Vegas? I know there's so many world-renowned chefs that already have restaurants here anyway, but I was thinking, like, when people come to Vegas, they love to spend money.
Oh, they do.
And this is, like, the events aren't cheap at this one. I figured, like, it makes good business sense to have it in Vegas where people come here to...
Right. Well, I mean, I think, you know, before we had Vegas Uncorked, we were doing other events in Las Vegas. I don't want to bore you with the history because I've been at Bon Appetit for longer than half the people who work there now have been alive. I mean, I think it was like, you know, when Bellagio opened in 1997 mm-hmm. is Elizabeth Blau. I don't know if you know her.
Yeah.
She was instrumental in bringing world-renowned chefs to the Strip. Because before, it was, you know, there's some good food, but it was steakhouses and, you know, some seafood places.
Right,
but
you
know, there wasn't big names. And when she came in and brought in Jean-Georges Van Richten and Michael Mina and Julian Serrano and Le Cirque from New York, that kind of set off this, what we now know as Las Vegas culinary scene with these chefs. So I think we saw that and wanted to be a part of that, and we had celebrated and we wrote a lot about those chefs. So that was the kind of impetus, is like, hey, this is a place where all over the United States, people come to Las Vegas. They used to come for gambling, And now they're coming for the entertainment.
Absolutely.
You know, they're coming to drink and eat and see the different shows. So it just became, Las Vegas was almost a microcosm of what was happening in the United States, where food and beverage became a reason to travel.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Like, food is entertainment now, right?
It
now.
It is.
Culturally.
I mean, that's, to me, that's the, you know, you see the same stores. You're talking about Starbucks or whatever. you see those places all over,
yeah.
You know, all over. And even if you're in Italy or you're in France, you're in the Philippines or wherever. And I think food is that one thing that is that window into culture that is still unique and distinctive. And
yeah.
Even in Vegas, even though you have, you know, sister restaurants opening from other cities,
mm-hmm.
They're still Las Vegas restaurants, and like, you know, and they're distinct in that way. So I think that was the original impetus, was just to celebrate that and be involved in a dynamic city that was having an increasingly dynamic food scene.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Why not?
Indeed. So you're from Florida. Born in Florida,
I was born in Florida. When people ask me that question, I usually say Atlanta, because my parents have never actually told me, but I think I was basically like 3 weeks old when we moved. So
yeah.
I'm technically from Gainesville, Florida,
yeah.
Home of the Gators, but I moved to Atlanta, Georgia. So that is home.
Okay.
That is home. I mean, of course, I've been in New York City longer than any place now. So that's more home, but
I could tell that you were from the South even before I knew you were from the South, because every time we have a Southern person on the show and we ask for their favorite foods, it's almost entirely Southern food.
I know. It gets in your blood. You can't get it out.
Apparently.
I mean, because they've when I moved up north, you know, they kind of beat my accent out of me.
Ah.
But they can't beat my love of Southern food
right.
out of me, right?
Right?
But I will say one thing that will happen in Vegas, if, you know, maybe I have a little bit too much of something, I start throwing out the y'alls
mm-hmm.
and the fixins.
Oh, even fixins.
Oh, do you know fixin? Like,
oh,
I'm
sure,
fixin
yeah.
to go to the
yeah.
store.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That drives people crazy up north.
Oh, does it really?
Fixin', yeah.
Oh,
they're like, what does that mean, fixin'? Is there a G on fixin'? I'm like, no, it's just this I-N. You can put an apostrophe in there if you want. Yeah, so definitely my sports teams are all Southern teams. I think my favorite foods
mm-hmm.
are Southern, and I think, you know, it's such a unique and diverse and, you know, it's a complex place to come from.
Oh, I can,
with,
yeah.
With all kinds of, you know, we have the racial issues, but it's something that I take great pride in.
Do you consider Florida to be part of the South?
Like I said, I have no connection to Florida.
So
no, Florida's it. So I would say Gainesville's the South.
Okay.
But you go to Miami and like Tampa Bay, it gets a little it gets See, a little blurry.
Gwyneth's from Florida as
right.
well. So we were having this discussion, and
yeah.
it seems like it really depends on like which city
right.
in Florida we're talking about, whether
right.
it counts as the South or not.
But I would also, some people even argue that Atlanta is not necessarily the South, because it is such a kind of destination. It's a transient city. It's like, you know, there's like Mississippi and Alabama and Louisiana. Like, those are hardcore Southern. But Atlanta's is, it's Southern.
Yeah.
But like, I didn't grow up going to Meat and Threes. And my mom wasn't making collards. And it, you know, it was much more not dynamic, but it was just, I didn't grow up with a big front porch and like
mm-hmm.
sipping on iced tea.
Uh-huh.
You know, it wasn't like that for me. I didn't really have that.
But you did have pimento cheese.
I had a lot of pimento cheese. That was the one food I think that I was weaned on. Like, there was probably a week didn't go by that I wasn't eating pimento cheese, whether it was in my school lunch or, you know, after you'd be out playing baseball or running around, that, you know, I would come home and my mom would have cheap white bread,
mm-hmm.
like really soft white bread,
mm-hmm.
and then homemade pimento cheese.
So homemade.
Always homemade.
Okay.
The stuff in the jar, like, you can buy now is junk.
Well, so, yeah, I've heard that. I was looking into it, and it seems like there's one brand called Palmetto that
Palmetto's not bad. Palmetto's
yeah.
not bad.
It seems like that's the one that people are like, okay, but everything else, absolutely no way.
Right. Well, it's one thing, like, pimento cheese is, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this, it's the easiest thing to make. It's not like, you know, you're searing foie gras at home, you know.
Right,
like,
right.
There's no excuse in my book
to not make it. Especially because you can buy the pre-shredded cheese. Like, if you wanted to make it super
right.
easy, you can buy the cheese part
that
of it
true.
Shredded.
But also, if you're buying pre-shredded cheese, I'm questioning your life choices. I really am. I mean, you can buy a box grater, and I mean, my 9-year-old can grate cheese for the pimento cheese.
But your 9-year-old probably has great muscle mass. You don't
maybe,
know.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
It can
know.
Be hard, I guess. Know. Yeah. So, okay. You once printed your grandmother's recipe.
Grandma Knowlton's pimento cheese. Yes.
And let's go over what it's in. I was about to read out the ingredient list, but you probably
Yeah. Are. So my grandmother, she's from West Virginia, and she used to own a little place in Sistersville, West Virginia, called the Tasty Freeze.
Oh.
And I grew up going there as a kid. It was right, it's coal mining town, so it was all the truckers would stop at the Tasty Freeze. And she did chili dogs, and you could get coleslaw on top. She did French fries and hamburgers. So I kind of, whenever I would visit West Virginia, I would grow up, and they had a little... trailer that they would, when it was hot, you'd go in the trailer. And so that was my first taste of kind of pimento cheese.
Okay.
So I grew up making it with her. And so it was always, she always used, both had to be sharp cheddar. And uh-huh. She would use the orange or yellow cheddar and then also the white cheddar.
Was the orange one just for color?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And then, and orange was just more common. Like I think her using the white sharp cheddar was kind of her signature thing.
Okay, got it.
And you know how on a box grater you have the really fine one that mm-hmm. gets... She would not use that one. She would use the thicker one, like the
That's
bigger
the one
box
to use,
grater. Yeah,
I
that
think.
You would almost use on potatoes
yes.
if you're making hash
yes.
browns. So she would do that. She would put way too much mayonnaise in it.
uh-huh.
Way too much. Obviously, a little pinch of cayenne pepper. But then she would buy these jarred pimentos.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't spell, we spelled it P-I-M-E-N-T-O. There's controversy.
Well, so
some people put an I in there, two I's.
Yes, and I saw that that's the way that Bon Appetit does it, and I...
Don't get me started on that. I almost quit like 10 times over that, because the research people would come and be like, you know, there's two I's. I'm like, actually, there's not.
Because the two I's is how it's spelled in Spain, which is where these peppers come from,
yeah.
usually. Well, we'll get into it, but
right.
where when they first came to America, it was via Spain, imported from Spain, and that's the Spanish spelling of it, and then just like... About 20 years after yeah. they started importing, they just dropped that
America
second
I. America ruins everything, or misspells everything.
Right,
everything.
Yeah. But that's the convention now.
Right.
Pimento, not pimiento.
So we would buy those, you know, they come in the jar, mm-hmm. and you would just, you know, you'd, she would actually run them through a meat grinder.
Okay.
So it'd almost be super fine, and then that color, you know, that kind of runoff from the red chilies would
yeah.
kind of permeate through the, so you'd get this beautiful, almost speckled, almost like a slight red hue dye to the pimento cheese.
Yeah.
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 And she was the first one to make me grilled cheese pimento cheese sandwiches,
oh
which are so good. She gets that oozy mayonnaise kind of coming out.
I can't eat. I don't even like grilled cheese that much, but pimento cheese sandwiches are amazing. And there's this restaurant in Sonoma, California called the Fremont Diner.
I've been there.
Have you had the pimento cheeseburger?
I don't know if I've had that. I don't know. I've had their fried chicken before.
See, I'm not super familiar with Southern food. I grew up in Seattle, but when I had the pimento cheeseburger, I was like, excuse me?
Right.
What is this cheese concoction? The secret is that it's not just cheese, it's mayo too.
But see, that's the crazy thing about pimento cheese is it's worked its way out to the West.
Mm-hmm.
When I moved to New York, which was in 1997, right after college, I would make, that was kind of my go-to when I was having a dinner party, if I was going over to somebody's house for a potluck, I would make pimento cheese,
mm-hmm.
and people would look at it like, what the hell is that? Like this kind of orange mass. And I would always serve it with one of two things, right? You have to, it either has to be celery sticks
okay.
or it has to be Ritz crackers.
Ritz or nothing?
Ritz or nothing.
Okay.
I mean, in my book.
Right. Sure. Sure.
Because why not butter on cheese
right.
is the greatest thing in the world. And now like something happened where now I have all these Yankees, I can call them that, all these Yankees telling me about pimento cheese. And I'm like, please.
Oh, my goodness.
You people didn't even know what this stuff was.
The
in
audacity.
I know. But now that, but that's like the Southern food lexicon has grown so much from the South. And now, you know, you can't go to a restaurant without them having fried chicken or some sort
yeah.
of okra dish or
yeah.
pimento cheese.
Fried chicken is so popular right now. It's absolutely
yeah.
absurd.
I mean, there's a reason, because it's delicious.
Yeah.
You know?
But why now? I wonder.
Yeah, well, the markup's
we'll
good.
Never know.
I don't know.
So I say this in a totally non-combative way, but...
It's always a good way to start off
I
a
know.
Sentence.
Yeah. Just so you know.
Don't take this the wrong way, but...
I pimento cheese, absolutely a Southern food.
Yeah.
It may have originated in New York State. I know, God, your eyebrows could not be higher right now.
I don't know what you're talking about right now.
People
no,
think that
me.
Maybe because of cream cheese.
Okay.
So the history of cream cheese is that like post-Civil War dairy farmers. There used to be a ton of dairy farmers in New York State.
Okay, yes.
And they were kind of futzing around with new ideas, and they wanted to recreate Neufchâtel, the soft French cheese. And what they came up with, and at least in terms of what became the most commercially successful, was cream cheese, which is like the curds from Neufchâtel mixed with cream.
Right.
And then, for whatever reason, Philadelphia, they named that, and now we associate it with Pennsylvania more, but it's from there. And they would do a lot of mixing cream cheese with other things. So there's this idea that maybe it came from there because it changed so much because it was cream cheese, not the shredded cheese and mayo. It's a whole journey that I think actually maybe starts in Germany.
Okay.
Because in Germany, they do a lot of soft cheeses mushed with stuff.
Right.
And then you spread it on bread.
Right.
So I imagine that there were a lot of the dairy farmers in New York State who perhaps were of German extraction.
I don't buy it.
You don't even buy that?
You're just like... You know, it's one of those things. It's like food origins are so hard to pinpoint and locate.
Absolutely.
And you know, you could have some government official come and say, like, here's the proof, and I still wouldn't believe it.
Well, and, that's so funny. You're definitely a Southerner for that. You're like, nope, this is the way I know it, so it's the fact. you know that at the turn of the 1800s over to the 1900s, when food manufacturing was really increasing so much, and all the food manufacturers were printing recipe booklets, and that's weirdly the source of a lot of traditional American recipes, was the food manufacturers themselves coming up with it. And one of those things that they did was they mashed together cream cheese and then this new pimento pepper thing. That was brand new and exotic. And I guess it was like this, you know, having the white cream cheese and then the bright red peppers,
right,
it creates
looked,
such a cool color combo. Yeah. And like, as you said, the bleeding of it make it a little pinkish.
And that's what people entertained with, was those, you know, cheese balls and all those kind of weird, weird like jelly things that you just put out and it would just sit there.
Yeah. And again, from the food manufacturers, because you got to use up all these products that we're using and find out weird. I mean, I don't think any like human who wasn't thinking, how can I sell a bunch of stuff, came up with lime jello and walnuts and canned fruit. It's weird.
It is weird.
People love it. It's
delicious. I mean, I still, when I go home for Thanksgiving, there's still this like green jello thing that has pecans in it and marshmallows.
Yes.
And my family cannot. I think it's disgusting. And I don't think I've had maybe one bite, but I just stare at it, and then I realize how far we've come in America with food. You know, when you look at that.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Isn't it crazy? Yeah, we make things from scratch now, which was not case for a very long time. I think it was also a little disdained.
Yes. Yeah. But I think, you know, when I was growing up, whenever you went over to somebody's house, whether it was a dinner party or you were having like a long lazy lunch, that was the one common denominator, was everybody had some sort of pimento cheese variation that was passed down through their families. And even if you go to the Masters today, the golf tournament that just happened.
I was going to talk about it. Yeah.
So I've been lucky enough to go there one time, and they have these women, the Masters ladies, who will make these pimento cheese sandwiches, and they sell them for like 75 cents.
Yeah,
they're super cheap, and it comes on, you know, cheap white bread,
right?
And you can almost like ball it up and just throw it in your mouth.
Exactly.
But like that kind of tradition of eating pimento cheese, and now, you know, like you said, you can get it on burgers. They make, you know, little rice balls that come stuffed with pimento cheese.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, they try to make it all fancy and
stuff. Elevated, as they say.
Yes. I'm always scared of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know, it can get a little touchy to label things that way. So there's actually an article in Serious Eats that the writer Robert Moss did, and he had lots of good information. Specifically that, again, not to be combative, but...
No. Hey, I don't know everything. I just...
No, I'm kidding.
Blindly think things.
In around 1910, there were a lot of grocery stores in places like Minnesota and North Dakota who were selling their own, like, store-made pimento cheese for 10 cents a jar. And it was weird. Apparently, all the ads that were like, pimento cheese, something new. They would always say something new. So an indication that it was new and exciting. And there was already different spellings of it. Pimiento and pimento.
Did he have pictures of these?
Have any pictures of it. So we'll have to take his word for it, I guess.
Well, he's a Southerner, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. So I half trust him now.
Okay. Yeah. That's good. So they were, the pimentos were all being imported, but then here's where it starts to become Southern. There's a farm called the Georgia Experiment Station, which was one of those, you know, back when they were actually trying to have American farmers grow interesting things and get paid real money for it. That changed. That's a different episode. But it was outside of a town called Griffin, Georgia.
Griffin, Georgia.
Yeah. And they started growing their own pimentos. Not only growing them, but developing a roasting process that made it easier for the skins to come off.
Interesting.
Yes. For people who don't normally cook a lot with peppers, you heat them up and then put them, either wrap them in like wet paper or put them in a bag.
Yeah.
And
skin comes right off.
Yeah, so, yeah. The condensation, it loosens it. So they came up with a machine, a roaster that did that. In 1938, that farm grew 25,000 acres of pimento peppers.
Wow. So what were they growing the pimentos for, though?
To jar them.
To jar them.
So it was, using these peppers was all in the sort of like ladies' luncheon genre of foods.
Makes sense.
They were putting them on all kinds of finger sandwiches.
Okay.
In salads.
Right.
And by salad, I mean served cold stuff that's mixed together.
Right.
I certainly don't mean lettuce.
And also probably stuffing them inside of olives.
Yeah, so apparently the whole, I feel like I haven't seen, I remember growing up in the 80s, the olive stuff with pimentos were such a thing.
Right.
I feel like maybe they're less.
They're still out there,
they
though.
They exist.
Yeah.
But the idea behind it is putting them in green olives because they're so briny. So the sweetness of the pepper kind of cuts the salty strongness of the olives.
I still have a soft spot for buying like a canned thing of olives, like, and you, and that you have that liquid in there.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that stuff.
Do you really?
I love cheap olives. I love good olives too, but I love like black olives and brine.
Oh,
I used to just eat those as a kid. I don't like them warm. I like them cold. Like if you put them on pizza, it's, to me, it's disgusting.
Oh, when you said warm olives, I was like, what are you even talking about? Pizza, got it.
Pizza, right?
Yeah.
But then if you just, you know, you put them in the fridge and they get them real cold.
Uh-huh.
And I used to like the piment, the green ones with the pimentos in there. Those were delicious to me.
Do they have different flavor profiles for you? Or is there different olives?
Oh, like, yeah. I think so. I mean, some are sweeter. Some are kind of have that more kind of, I want to say like, not leathery taste, but kind of dried, you know?
Okay.
Like some of this, like the dried black olives, you know, that you could get for a while that have that kind of unctuousness to them.
Interesting.
And then, you know, nowadays, like the Castelvetrano olives and, it's like a whole new world of olives out there. But I wonder if that farm though was mostly selling them, like you said, to put on tea sandwiches, if you will, or to stuff in, like they would sell them to the olive people who were making.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
I don't know.
Right?
I don't know.
I think so, because you got to have your corporate clients,
right? But they would call those Spanish olives, right? The ones that had the pimentos
in there.
They would call them Spanish. So this goes back to your Spain. Your
the Spain story.
Your blasphemy that you're talking about.
I know. I'm so sorry. I might be right.
No, I'm sure you are.
Oh, goodness. Ooh, that was a
loud
one. That went right into Gwyneth's headphones. Sorry about that. Oh, and for listeners, I keep saying Gwyneth because Michelle couldn't make it to Vegas. She's at DragCon interviewing drag queens this weekend.
Wow.
So we have a fill-in producer.
Why aren't we at DragCon, huh?
I know. They should mash up the two events.
Right. We should have a pimento cheese social at the DragCon, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
I love that so much.
Wouldn't that be fun?
And so many drag queens do really good Southern personas.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Now this is an idea, and really you should pitch it to Bon Appetit and have it be co-hosted by Smart Mouth, please.
Okay.
That would be great if I could get in
I'll
on
work
this.
On that.
Great. So, and in the late 30s also there was a company called Pomona Products Company, and they were based out of Griffin too. So they were kind of the packers, and they were producing 10 million cans of pimentos every year in the late 30s.
I feel like I need to go to Griffin, Georgia and just poke around.
The farm still exists.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, God. I hope they aren't just growing like corn and soybeans at this point, but it's
know.
Also probably not, because it's one of those ones that's supposed to be experimental and seeing what grows in that temperature and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So I love things like that. I think that's really interesting and probably good for the country. So in a complete divergence from the rest of the trends of the United States, post-World War II, the pre-made pimento cheese products, the canned ones, etc., fell out of favor.
Interesting.
As we were talking about earlier, you don't buy it pre-made.
No.
So the exception sometimes is if you have like a local independent grocery store or deli.
Absolutely.
People will accept that.
Yes. And then there were places I grew up with that my family knew that they made good, you know, it was made that day or that morning, and you would buy it. And nowadays, if you go to some of the, you know, these kind of new delis that have popped up in the South, you know, and they're doing sandwiches, they'll have their homemade pimento cheese that you can go and buy at the store. There's a place in Durham that I've been to. And I think Ashley Christensen, who has a place in Raleigh called Pool's Diner.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah.
She kind of, one of her signature dishes is her pimento cheese. And wherever, whenever she goes to do an event or something, usually there's a bowl of pimento cheese on the table, just as it's also that welcome in Southern hospitality,
okay,
kind of like, I'm bringing this to you. Maybe you've had it, but I love it.
And yeah.
Because pimento cheese is one of those things that no matter where it comes from,
mm-hmm,
it is something that when people look at it, it you know, doesn't look good. It's an orange, mushy food. And it's kind of, but then once people try it, I mean, if you don't like mayonnaise, then I don't really want to talk to you anyway. but, you know, you spread that on, like I said, you spread that on a Ritz cracker, you dip, you know, a cold celery, you know, stick in there. It's nothing better.
So when she puts out a bowl of pimento cheese on a table, is there a spoon and you just put it on your plate, or how?
I think, yeah, I mean, I think to be polite, she does, but I think most Southerners, like, it's, there's no spoon. You just dip. You know?
Oh, so there's dipping accoutrement
already. Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I see.
You would kind of dip.
I see.
That. Yeah.
I mean, I'd be totally into that.
Yeah.
I the burger at Fremont Diner, and then there's a place in a barbecue restaurant that was right next to the LA Weekly building that I'm totally blanking on the name.
Maple Block.
Yeah, they make a pimento cheese sandwich.
Oh, they do.
That's think really good.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's good.
And I ate so many of them that I actually had to stop eating pimento cheese for a while because I think I kind of OD'd on them.
You can OD
bit.
On it.
Yeah.
I mean, it is not diet food.
No, it's
it's
so silly because it's like kind of a, it does feel a little stupid to spend money on a pimento cheese sandwich because it's like spending money on a peanut butter and jelly.
Right.
I feel like.
That's true. You're right. You're
but
right. That is true.
It was also so good.
Right. And also just the physical act of like spooning out like two or three cups of mayonnaise, like measuring that out.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, that restaurants use a stick of butter in some foods,
mm-hmm,
but then when you actually have to do it at home, you're like, damn.
Yeah.
This is why I go out to eat, so I don't have to see this.
Right.
You know?
Don't want to know about all of it. Although the great news is that now all the quote unquote experts are being like, oh, we were just kidding about fat being bad for you. It's actually sugar. So
do you remember
bring on
snack
the butter.
Wells?
Yes.
When everyone was like eating snack wells, and then they were basically like, oh, those cause cancer.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's all man-made products.
I lived
in
to
these.
The snack well and the, what was the Olestra chips? Do you remember those that caused
rampant diarrhea?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that amazing that those even made it to the market at all? That's
it was
so
crazy. Those are dark
are
times.
I know, when people were just, they wanted to lose weight so badly that they would, but also eat chips that they would risk pooping themselves
isn't that, the thing? But it's also like, and I'm a cyclist, so I eat a lot of those health bars and all that.
Okay.
But those are also, those are candy bars masquerading as health
Absolutely.
Bars.
Absolutely.
You know?
If you compare and contrast the ingredients, you might as well just eat a Snickers.
And some of them are good ingredients, but it's still a lot of sugar in those things. So
okay, but as a biker, you eat those and not like a Baby Ruth or a Snickers or something that is actually manufactured to taste good?
No. Well, I think some of them taste good.
Okay.
Like,
I
don't have any say in Kind bars, but Kind bar makes like a crispy, gluten-free, like ricey thing that is, they actually give them out on Delta Airlines.
Oh, okay.
You know, in the little basket that they bring around. And those are quite good. I like those.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the waffle stroop, the little, the with the caramel inside, the little waffles, those are good too for cycling.
But those aren't marketed as exercise food. You're just talking.
Yes, they are.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a brand called Stinger that does like honey little waffle things that you can just, runners use them, triathletes use them.
Okay.
They sell them at Whole Foods or wherever.
Do you do goo? Do you squeeze
goo makes me, goo's disgusting. I think that's fallen out like with a lot of, because it's like when you're exercising, like, you know, when you're running, you're thirsty, and to put like something in your mouth, like it's almost like peanut butter.
Yeah.
It's too much to like swallow. And
that makes sense.
It's gnarly.
Yeah.
So I think they've figured out different ways to get that, whether that's that protein or the carbs or the sugars that you need when you're exercising, in a much more palatable way.
And some of those are really just caffeine.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Yeah, just no actual nutrition. They just
no.
keep you going.
Right. But if you're running a marathon or riding 100 miles, you don't really care.
Yeah, whatever it takes, right? I can't imagine. I've never even tried such a thing. Absurd. So I do wonder, what, I don't know if you have any insight into this, but soft cheese mixed with pimento, like a cream cheese, versus mixing mayo and shredded cheese. Do you think that's just people figured out that mayo and shredded cheese had more flavor variety and more texture?
I don't know. I mean, I think it was just, I mean, this, the South loves mayonnaise in general.
Okay.
Duke's mayonnaise. I think it was probably just cheap also.
Like, okay.
I think mayonnaise is a pretty cheap product. And they weren't, they were using, I mean, my mom used to buy blocks of industrial, like, cheese that was like almost like government looking cheese. You know, like, it wasn't, I think it was a way to stretch ingredients and serve something that cost like a nickel, you know, when it came down to it. But I don't know.
No, that all sounds accurate.
Right.
Especially because this isn't something that could ever be called a fact, but some of the best tasting foods in the world were stuff that were like, oh God, well, this is what we have and we'll figure it out.
Right.
And it's the cheapest thing we have. And if you, it turns out if you put like a little bit of chopped pepper in it, it tastes amazing.
Right. It's like tater tots.
Yes.
I prefer tater tots to most other fried potato things. And that just came out. They had all this leftover
mush. It was the trimmings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, well, let's not throw this away. Let's make little.
Yeah.
Whoever came up with the tater tot is genius.
Yeah. It's actually the guy who started the Ore-Ida company.
It is.
Yeah. That's why Ore-Ida is the way to go.
God bless him.
Yeah. He introduced it at the Miami Food Fair in like the 40s or something like that. And people went nuts for
it. Have you done a show on tater tots?
I think that I have. I must have. I don't know why I know all this about tater tots.
Because they're delicious.
Yeah, they're so good. They're so great. And, you know, I kind of think that the frozen kind from bags, like, go with that. No need to do, like, homemade.
Oh, no, no. There's a whole genre of foods that it's like ketchup. Like, anyone who makes homemade ketchup should have their chef whatever credentials revoked.
I kind of agree
with
you.
And homemade tater tots? Like, why would you do that?
Yeah. You want to get the store-bought tater tots with the Heinz ketchup,
yes,
and you're in business.
It's ludicrous that people even attempt to do that.
Yes.
Yes.
I am in total agreement with you, and I'm glad that you said it.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of like cookbook authors who I really respect, but then they'll have like a ketchup recipe and I'm like, get out of here with that. No. Why waste your time?
No, it's terrible.
It's not
That's
even
my favorite thing
good.
About going to Pittsburgh is so I can eat Heinz ketchup because it's local, right? It's local food.
You're eating artisanally.
Right. And yeah, well, I don't want to, Heinz is also my, this is the only ketchup in my book too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Coke and Pepsi. I'm from Atlanta, so there's
Coke
only,
all the way.
There's only Coke. Come on. And it's kind of like that with Heinz ketchup.
I'm desperate to know who actually prefers Pepsi. No one will ever admit to it, but they still exist.
I don't know any of those people. Maybe because I've divorced all of them and not friends with those people.
You only travel in certain circles.
That's right. Check the box if you prefer Coca-Cola Classic or
So you mentioned earlier the 75-cent pimento cheese sandwiches at the Masters.
I don't know
golf
how much
tournament.
They are now, but I think they're always super inexpensive.
Yeah. So there was some drama a couple years ago when they switched food purveyors.
I heard about this.
Yeah, and it caused an absolute upset. Probably more than if someone had like cheated in the game or
something
like that. It was madness. So I guess though the person who made the recipe that they like finally gave away his quote unquote secrets.
Oh.
So this is apparently the recipe.
Okay.
Tell me how you think it sounds, because it kind of goes in some directions.
Okay.
Okay. The shredded sharp cheddar cheese.
Yes, absolutely.
Cream cheese.
Okay.
Duke's mayonnaise. They specify Duke's.
Absolutely. 100%.
The pimentos.
Yep.
White pepper.
Okay.
Salt. Granulated onion. Granulated garlic. Hot sauce. That's it.
Okay. So I have no problem with the cream cheese thing. Sure. I guess it adds a certain texture. I don't think it's unnecessary.
I think it just bulks it up probably.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean the granulated stuff that comes from a different era. Like, you know, like Drivers, Dine-Ins and Dives. You ever watch that show? Like every single restaurant that they visit has like garlic powder and onion powder. It's almost like MSG or some sort of like flavoring that just gets in, you know, people's head.
So do you think that, I mean, is that because people tried both and preferred it or just because it's cheaper and easier?
I think it's just cheaper and easier. Yeah.
You know what's interesting? People who can't process, how was it pronounced? Alamin?
The Alliums?
Yes, Alliums. Yeah, I forgot where the I went.
The Onion family?
The Onion family. Thank you. I could have just said that. Sometimes if they can't process the real vegetable, they can do the powdered version.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, but see, back then, nobody had food allergies, you know? That's just a recent thing. No, I'm kidding. And then the hot sauce, I will put hot sauce once in a while in mine.
That's kind of a know your audience thing, right?
Yeah. And I've started to branch out with, because, you know, some of those, the pimento peppers are, there's a kind of like, I'll say jelly quality, but there's like a syrupy quality to the liquid in there.
Oh.
And there's some really good kind of artisanal Spanish, like chili de arbol, or like different kinds of peppers that you can buy now.
Yeah.
Higher end, that I've started to like have a little bit more heat in them or just a better texture.
Are you telling me that you put non-pimento peppers in your pimento cheese?
I do. I'm branching out.
My goodness.
I know. But that's called evolution. We're evolving from this.
Well, I mean, I'm sure some people would disagree strongly. I feel like it's not my business as a northerner what you do with your pimento cheese.
It's not your business. You're right. You know your place. No, I'm kidding. But you mentioned Duke's mayonnaise, mm-hmm. which is something that southerners feel very particular about. I'm naming all these brands, but I love Hellman's. I think Hellman's is amazing mayonnaise. But now that living in New York City, you can finally get Duke's. But some people cannot stand Duke's because it has this certain acidic quality that people don't like.
It's more acidic than like Hellman's or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. And sometimes there's also a texture, like I'm not going to use that dreaded M word when I'm talking about something that happens.
Yeah,
don't say that. But there is kind of this texture that it leaves. I'm not sure, it's more oily or something.
Okay.
But I will use either Duke's or Hellman's. I'm not so hardcore that it has to be one of those two.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But you know, there's a place in called Turkey and the Wolf in New Orleans, which mm-hmm. is a sandwich shop. And they go through gallons and gallons of Duke's, and they swear that like people like it so much because they love Duke's.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
Bologna sandwich, a fried bologna sandwich with Duke's mayonnaise. That's classic Nashville Tennessee food. Yeah.
I do like that. Like that restaurant that you mentioned, they'll be like, "It's not us, it's the mayonnaise."
Oh, they give all the credit to Duke's mayonnaise. They should be sponsored. They have one of the chefs there has a huge Duke's tattoo, literally on his chest.
That might be too much.
That's hardcore.
I wonder if his mother is offended by that or if he has a partner who's like, okay.
I'm in awe of people who get like brand name food products tattooed on their bodies. You know, it's incredible.
I know
a few people, bartenders who have like Fernet Branca tattoos.
Oh my gosh.
You know some
Gwyneth
people,
knows
huh?
someone too?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. That's like might be your... That's your first indication that you might have an issue.
I know. You need to get out more.
Yeah.
For sure. There's more to life than just your business. Awesome. Well, okay. So do you think that your grandma's sounds better than the master's pimento cheese recipe? Or are you just agnostic and
No, that's
like
the thing
both?
With Southern food is the best food that you've ever had is, you know, that your grandmother or your grandfather made, you know, that hands down. So of course my grandmother's pimento cheese is 100 times better.
That's great.
And you know, the funny thing is, so like I said, I've been at Bon Appetit for 18 years and I've done a lot of recipes and I've written a lot of things, but I get more feedback about Grandma Knowlton's pimento cheese from people, and she's no longer living, but mm-hmm. Obviously my dad's mom, and he's always so proud of like when somebody comes up to him and says, "I made your mom's pimento cheese." So that's the connection with food, right?
Yeah.
Those things that we kind of forget as we're running around eating all this fancy food and all that the best foods are the ones that somebody makes for you, maybe that you're related to, and they make it with love. You know, that's the biggest thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah.
Aw, well, we're going to end it there because it's so sweet. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on Smart
Thanks
Mouth.
For having me.
Where can people find you on social media or whatever?
So all those tags is all Andrew O. Knowlton.
Oh, goodness.
There's some Canadian actor that he's my bête noire. He has Andrew Knowlton. So I'm Andrew O. The O stands for Owen Knowlton.
Yeah. All right.
So.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm trying to tell you something about my life. Maybe give me insight between black and white. And the best thing you ever done for me, just to help me take my life less seriously.